I'm going to consider my life a waste if I didn't do everything in my power to empower as many people in the world to realize how brilliant they are. And that's like the goal. That's the goal of the foundation at a deeper level, is saying, yes, you can. You can have anything you want regardless of the circumstance. You are brilliant. And it's just, we just happen to wrap it around, build a nice software business.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today we're going into a new topic. I haven't really talked about this much on Super Fast Business, and there's a big reason for that. It's not something that I typically work with. I tend to work with people who have gone through this phase, but it is my delight to be able to bring to the show today Dane Maxwell from The Foundation. Welcome, Dane.
Hey, thanks, James.
Now, Dane, you love startups, is that right?
Beautiful. Yeah, I love startups. What I love about startups is not, I love the process of people starting companies from absolutely nothing. So thefoundation.com is just about 2 or 3 years old right now, but I envision it 10 or 20 years down the line like an Alcoholics Anonymous for entrepreneurs starting from nothing. You won't even know my name, just like you don't even know the creator of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Foundation is synonymous with, it's a place where all entrepreneurs all over the world go to when they want to start a business and they have nothing to start. So I believe that businesses can be started regardless of any circumstance, whether it's no idea, no money, no credibility. And in that space of starting from nothing, a total abundance and magic can manifest if you approach it the right way.
Okay, so just on that, this is very appealing sounding. You can start with no money. Was it no idea?
Yeah, no idea. It's best to start with no idea.
Right. So I think this is fascinating. A lot of people come to me with, I've got a great idea, and they're trying to build a business to justify their idea, which I think is a terrible mistake. And it especially happens with things like multi-level marketing or where someone's just observed something and they think, oh, this would be great because they like it, but then they haven't really validated it, and we'll probably get into those sort of topics. So I think because you've got such an appealing hook, you must attract a lot of people into that sort of sphere. What sort of chance of success do people have?
Well, above 80. I want to say 100%. It's really difficult to fail in the end doing this process. The thing that we didn't talk about, what makes the foundation work when you have no idea, no money, no special skills, no expert status, the thing that makes it work is our heavy emphasis on mindset, emotional processing, emotional awareness, limiting belief work in the deep inner game of entrepreneurship. Because when people think they need an idea or money or credibility or to be an expert, it's typically a lot of internal stories and internal dialogues going on inside their body, like from their chest to their heart, to their throat, to their stomach. And that's actually where most of the beliefs and stuff are locked, sometimes in the mind, but typically held in the body. And when we move that energy in the body, the person's like, oh, wow, you know, I don't need an idea. I can just go into a business, ask them what they use Microsoft Excel for. They tell me they use Excel for tracking their financial reporting. I ask them if they'd like to turn that into a software application. They say yes. I ask them how much they want to pay. They pay me. Then I go build the product. It's a simple conversation. Now I've just created an idea. And that's what one of our most successful students did last year, just by asking the Excel question. You don't need an idea.
Now, was that Sam or someone else?
No, that was Carl Mattiola. He worked directly under Elon Musk at Tesla, and he was miserable as an employee. So he joined the foundation, and in 6 months he quit. Now, what you don't know about Carl is that he reversed 28 or so limiting beliefs to get there, and he had a really tumultuous journey. His father got committed into an institution. Like, all these things happened during the 6 months, but because he had the framework to process emotions and be with the mindset and limiting beliefs and the deep inner game that comes up when you start a company, that's why he was able to be successful. It's not about the idea. It's about who you are as a person and how you run with that idea. And hopefully you're not even starting with an idea. The most dangerous word in entrepreneurship is, it's not procrastination, it's not risk, it's not fear, it's not tomorrow. The most dangerous word in business is guessing. And if you're a Fortune 500 company or a Fortune 50 company or a mom and pop shop, if you're guessing what product you think is going to work, if you're guessing what thing people want in your product, you're doing any guessing at all, you're in really dangerous territory. And we don't do any guessing ever. And that's why the success rate is I don't know the percentage of success rate, because, well, we had 336 students in the last class, and 41 graduated with some sort of business with at least one paying customer. And of the 336 that joined, there were 210 left at the end. And of the 210, about 41, you know, not everyone that buys your course is going to take action. So our success rate is above 10% on all of our people, but more like 20 or 30% on the people who actually took action. And for the people that, like, when you actually follow the framework, it's impossible. It's really impossible to fail, because we don't really believe in failure. We believe in learning and progress. And so we're not looking to build a product that no one wants. We're not trying to guess. So we'll ask people if they'll buy a product before it exists, get money, and then go build it. If we can't sell the idea before it exists, we would consider that a failure and move on to the next idea. So we're talking about failing in like the span of a couple days.
So what's your take on someone like Samsung releasing a gold phone the week after Apple had huge success? Is it okay to learn from your competitors, or should you be forging a new path?
I don't know. That's a good question. What do you think?
Well, you know, I come from the car industry, Mercedes-Benz in particular, and it was kind of amusing how Toyota will create a luxury brand. They'll call it Lexus, which stands for Luxury Export USA. And they basically wait to see what comes out. And then I guess a lot of the predictability is there. You know what the market wants. It's already been evidenced, and they're just rapidly replicating. I think from my point of view, there's always going to be some emulation happening, but a lot of the guesswork's gone out of the market. It does solve a problem, but they already know there's a market for it. The competitors launch their salvos. I think it's kind of lame, but at the same time, so it's not very arty, that's all. And I imagine that there's a lot of artists who want to express and want to create and want to make new things, and they would almost find your process challenging if they have to channel it into a systematic or scientific process of elimination, perhaps. How do the arty creatives go in your process?
I'm not sure. Like what I can tell you is that, I don't know about you, James, but all the business ideas that I've ever come up with for myself that I thought would be cool for other people, none of them worked. None of them. And like after the fifth one, I was like, fuck this. Like, this is stupid. Like, I'm just going to ask people what they want, and then I'm going to give it to them. So I think people, no matter how hard you try, James, the people that come to you with the idea, some you can talk to your blue in the face, but it's not until they go out for a year, fail for a year, and then realize experientially, holy shit, this sucks. I have got to try a different approach.
Yeah, I think we've all been through that. I was doing things, even knowing as I was doing them that it wasn't the right thing to do, but I had to make that, I just had to forge down that path and learn the hard way. People are pretty stubborn. I mean, the interesting thing here is the reason I don't work with startups is by the time someone comes to me with at least $10,000 a month in sales, they've already been through that process. They've, for whatever reason, mentally or strategically or systems-wise, they've got something that works, and that's where my skill set's ideal, because I step in and I blow it up, turn that $10,000 into $100,000 a month, and I love that part of the process. So interestingly, that's one of the filters on my checklist. So I have a scientific process for finding my ideal customer who has a problem that I can solve, and it's usually that they've grown to the point where they can't take it to the next level by themselves or without some outside assistance. So, and you've done that, but from the zero point.
Yeah, and the 10,000 to 100,000 is, I don't mean to belittle what you're doing at all, but it's a little bit easier than the zero to 10,000.
Oh, it's way easier. I'm not going to debate you on that. That's why I select it. Like, I don't mind doing difficult work, but it takes so much energy and emotion to sit down and go through startup phases with people. And I just did this a few weeks ago with my buddy Ezra Firestone at a retreat, and we had three startups. And I had to pull out my old project stream list, I call this, and it's from zero through to building a successful business, because I've done a number of startups of my own, service businesses, coaching businesses, we do websites and traffic, etc. So I start with domains and build a multi-million dollar business from it. To do that with other people, I find energy sapping. Obviously, you're doing it with such a large volume and probably on you've got enough data to be able to really refine the bits that work and don't work. So I totally agree. What I do is significantly easier, which is why I do it, because that's my sweet spot of I love it, I'm good at it, and it's easy.
There's a part of me that envies you because there's a part of me that wants to go down that road. Yeah, let's take people from 10 to 100 grand a month. But I see so much pain in the world, and I see so many people that want to get started, but they just don't know how. And it's difficult. It's emotionally difficult. It's emotionally draining to help people when they're starting from nothing. But it's like right now I'm 30, and it's just a journey that I'm. It's a battle that I want to fight. And you asked how back going to artists, how they go through the program. It's not like bad to come up with your own idea, but it is risky and dangerous to build it unless you've pre-sold it. So however you get your idea, whether it's using our idea extraction process where you go in and you find the pain, those are like the three keywords, find the pain. And you know, you do that by asking, what do you use Excel for in your business, and other really good questions you can ask. You can take people through their to-do list, take them through their calendar, take them through their email, and have them go through each individual one. And there's lots of pain in to-do lists, lots of pain in emails, lots of pain in the calendars. Like, well, what's that meeting about? Oh, you're talking with your web designer. How do you go about doing that? Like, you go through the whole process. You find enormous amounts of pain and potential for you to create solutions. That's idea extraction. Now, that's like the proven way that you can just, like, if you want to crank out business after business after business and not to worry about it failing, you just follow that approach. But if you're like the artsy person, you've got a little bit of excitement around coming up with your own unique, cool, sexy thing, I mean, fine, I don't advise it. But if you're going to do that, pre-sell the idea. Get someone to give you money before you build it.
I love it. Now, so we're talking about the same thing. It's exactly what I do, a gap analysis, and then you just solve the problem. And we just pick different parts of the scale. Now, let's dig a little bit deeper into this. So we've covered your why. And I love that. Your why is really the same as me. I see a lot of people create something amazing and then struggling to take it to the next level. So it's nice that we're being able to fit into the value chain and help people all the way from the very beginning right through to way beyond their wildest dreams. Why do you think you were successful when others fail so much?
Because I failed more. and learn from the failure. Like, failure becomes power with the skill of reflection. So Tom Brady was like one of the best quarterbacks ever, and a friend of, I don't know the story's like true because I've never read it, but a friend told me it and it feels true. Someone asked Tom Brady in an interview somewhere, like, how did you become such a good quarterback? And he said, I watch all my game tapes and I take notes and I reflect on what I did wrong. And that's when my game went to a whole new level. And the skill of reflection is, and I don't do it nearly enough as an entrepreneur, but when you're just starting out, reflection, 10 minutes a day. What did I learn? What could I do better? And how could I be more productive? You know, if you just write those three things down at the end of the day and like just a few notes, you'd be amazed at the skill of reflection that comes from it. But like you said, the why, I believe the world can change when entrepreneurs realize that they can start companies regardless of their circumstance. So have you heard of the Institute of Integrative Nutrition?
No, but I was thinking about Anne Ryan when you were saying that.
Yeah. So Institute of Integrative Nutrition, they sign up like 2,000 women to their $5,000 life coaching program every 60 days. They're like $50+ million a year. And that's what we're modeling the foundation after. And the creator of Institute of Nutrition, he said, you know, his belief is that the human body can heal itself. And he wants to get that message out into the world. And at the foundation, our belief is that you can start regardless of your circumstance, and we're a yes to you no matter where you're at in your life. And that's like, that's the juice that really drives.
Well, it sounds like you're Samsung to the Institute's Apple.
So to speak, except we just heard about the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, and we're just modeling the model that they use for success. But I wouldn't consider it us creating the phone like Samsung.
No, I'm being a little bit facetious, but
we totally copied him in that case.
No, the point is that there's when I was learning how to sell and then manage, I had this idea that out there in the world, somebody was doing a way better job than me So I would spend time thinking about what it is that they might be doing, or researching and looking for that, looking outside my industry, which is something Jay Abraham did well, to find out what's going well and then to move quickly towards that once you discover it. And for the same reason, I read quite a lot of books, because, you know, pretty much every idea has already been published. It's a matter of finding it. In your reflection thing and failure, I would just like to raise a counterpoint there. Jason Fried from 37 Signals talks about the concept of learning from other people's mistakes and eliminating failure, and that it's not necessarily a requirement to succeed. Now, I might be paraphrasing that incorrectly, but here's another angle on reflection, and I think this comes more from Dan Sullivan. It's also worth reflecting back where you were a few years ago and then seeing where you're at now and celebrating what you've done well and doing more of that as well, rather than just the failures. Because quite often, if you can look for what you've done well or what's working for you, and you double down or go deeper on that, you can also have significant success.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving forward, I love that you've got a strong reason for this. What sort of things have gone wrong for you in the journey of helping startups? Have you ever felt that you went down the wrong path, or that you've had students who didn't get the result they want at some point, and then you've made corrections? I guess you'd call this a pivot.
Sort of. The first year of the foundation was 88 students, and we had 3 people graduate with a software company. So pretty dismal numbers. And we're metric focused. So the second year we had 336 and 41. So 3 divided by 88 is like less than 5%. 41 divided by 336 is like 10 to 12%. We've doubled the success rate in our students from what we learned and made mistakes in the first year. The second year from third year, I think we'll go from 10 to 12% to 20 to 30%, because we're custom designing a completely new way to deliver content inside of a membership site model. We looked at Kajabi and all the platforms out there. We just weren't happy with any of them. So we're about $100,000 in to a kind of a gamified, community-based, action-based learning content system to deliver content that tells people where they're at, what they need to do next, and how to get help if they're stuck. And that's the second year. We had a shitty WordPress Office Autopilot plugin for our membership site, and it was like a back end of a blog, and people were just like, this sucks. Like, this looks like ass. You guys are a software company, and you're giving us, like, you guys teach us how to build software companies, and the software you use to run your company blows. And we're like, crap, this is totally backwards. So I love building software. I've built like 6 or 7 software products, and it's just so fun, so easy, and so effortless. Once you get the system down, it's like the best business model in the world. I think it's why Clay, who's a friend, you know, switched from info stuff to software. One, because software is already a passion of his, but just look at what his business has done since he's shifted to software, and he's applied all his brilliant marketing mind into software. Software is just the place to be. It's going to, like, somewhere I read 50 times increase in software in the next 10 years, because it's just so easy to get started now, which makes it a more competitive game.
Yeah, and you want a blueprint in a competitive field. Now, a couple of your students, I think they're doing somewhere around $30,000 to $50,000 a month that I've picked up as high-level business mastermind students. There must be, I mean, there's people popping out of your system with success. What would be sort of the wildest success story that you can put your mind on from what you've generated so far?
Yeah, there's one guy who's just crushed. He's bigger than we are. But who are the students that are in your program? What are their names?
Oh, I don't think I should say it on the public podcast for privacy reasons, but they're certainly welcome to disclose it in the comments section.
Cool. That's awesome. I love that they're at 30 to 50 grand a month. I'm like, who are they?
Well, they're doing really well, but they won't be doing that for much longer. They're already making significant steps. Interestingly, most of the people that come to me, their biggest challenges, they've gone past the getting an idea and validating it and finding a program and all that stuff. Where they get stuck is they run out of capacity, and they also have marketing challenges. It's almost always those two things. They've building up teams and staff to handle customer support, to come up with related product offerings to take it to the next level. You might see them start having user conventions, et cetera, for their stuff because it's starting to get big.
Mm. Sweet. So our biggest success story is he's at $300,000 a month right now, and he's got CRM software for hedge fund companies. And he built the application. He got the idea by talking to hedge funds. And hedge funds had this problem where the government's now requiring them to do audit trails of all of their things. So one of the really, like, you know, you've hit the jackpot when you've got an idea that the customer has to do with
compliance.
Or without. Yeah, compliance. They have to do it. It's not like, oh, if you do this, if you use my product, your life will be better. It's like, you have to use this no matter what. Might as well make it enjoyable. So yeah, he got that. He built it on top of Salesforce. So he built it in like 8 weeks. We like to build our products in 12 weeks or less. Like 3 months to market is our goal for our first iteration of the product. And we have a whole mindset around finding ideas that you can build in 12 weeks. Because it's a very specific kind of mindset to find ideas that you can build in 12 weeks. So anyway, he built this on Salesforce in 12 weeks or so. And it was like $25,000 for him to develop it. And he had a customer fund the entire development in exchange for a discount to use it for life. And now he's at $300,000 a month. And he got started without an idea, without money, and he didn't do any of the coding. So this process is just, I think it's the coolest thing since sliced bread for creating software companies from nothing.
That's nice. You know, sliced bread was a flop when it came out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, but there was basically no market. No one bought it, and the guy lost all his money, and it got picked up later on. So it's a very interesting and somewhat ironic thing that we're talking about. I don't think he did his pain point validation.
That's so bad. That's so badass. Well, hopefully he got to use the sliced bread for himself.
Yeah, someone did okay with it later when they finally figured it out. With the compliance thing, I will throw out a little tip for our listener that one thing I run an event usually once a year, and the person I was getting help with doing the event management said, you know what, you should invite people back because I hadn't thought that people would want to come back. And I positioned it in the sales material as a refresher training, and I offered people who had come to the event a repeat training. So it was going to be similar content but a refresher, and I pinned it on the fact that accountants, lawyers, doctors all have to do compliance training to remain credentialed. Why would it be any different in the field of internet business? And I now get about 75% of the people at my events come back every single event, and I'm now up to, I don't know, about a dozen events. So it was just this simple idea of just tying it in with the theme of compliance. Even if you don't have a strictly compliant requirement, people get that concept.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just talk about your quick checkpoint list of what things are important for a startup. You've given some huge clues, and that is to start from scratch and do that pain point analysis and to have a paying customer. What other things are essential for someone who wants to go down this path to know about?
Well, we're looking to redefine or rethink or change or switch up, or however you want to say it, how startups get started. How startups start up is like the jargon. And most people, there's five steps to the way that it works. And the first step is idea extraction, pain, find the pain. The second step is once you've found the pain, and in that pain, you validate like that it's worth, there's a small validation. So you find the pain and you're like, you know, this Excel thing. So you have this Excel problem. Would you pay for this product? Yes. Okay, cool. So that's like good enough to go to step two. Step two is then you build an info pack. And an info pack is like the fictional prototype of what would exist if it existed. So in this case, since we do software, we just show screenshots. We don't develop any code, but we develop the screenshots. And that's very interactive. You send it back and forth to that customer, like, hey, what do you think of this screenshot? Yeah, I like this. I don't like that. And you just, it's very back and forth. It's like very interactive. And once you get that info pack all done to the point where they're like, holy crap, this is awesome. What's it cost? Then step three is pre-selling. You pre-sell that customer, and then you go out and you pre-sell 5, 10, 15, 20, or some of our students pre-sell 50 customers before they build a product. And that's step three is pre-selling. Step four is finally building the product. Now, I've noticed step four is building the product, where most entrepreneurs think step one is building the product, but it's actually step four. And this is the biggest mind twist. It's still even like kind of a challenge for me sometimes. Like, I just, it's more fun to build a product than to sell it, but don't. And if you build a product in the foundation before you've pre-sold it, or you're caught writing code, because you're like, if you're a developer, we don't let you code inside the foundation. You have to hire it out. There's no way you're going to write your own code, because that's not how a business owner thinks. With some exceptions, you know, the guys at Google like created their own code. But for this purposes, like, you already know how to develop. We're looking for you to build new muscles and new skills. So if you're caught developing, if you're caught building a product before you have a pre-sale, we kick you out of the foundation. We don't let you sabotage yourself. And then step five, finally, James, is where you would come in. We have a small section on scaling. So those are the five phases. And that's how we kind of switch things up. So, you know, if you take step four, building a product, and you put it at step one, the more rookie the entrepreneur's mindset, and I don't mean rookie in a condescending way at all, but just the more novice or new you are as an entrepreneur, the more you're hung up on product or idea. To the newbie entrepreneur, the business can't exist until a product is made. But to the all-star marketer or entrepreneur, the business exists as soon as you have a customer. And so AppSumo started without any of their own products. Mindvalley, they don't create any of their own products. Free Credit Report or Experian, all these lead gen companies, they don't have products. They know a business starts with a customer. And when you realize that you don't need a product to have a business, you need a customer, that's when you start talking to people on the phone. You know, Carl talked to physical therapy practices and he said, what do you use Excel for? And now clinicmetrics.com was born. Jordy Wardman was talking to hotels and he asked them, what problems cost you the most money in your business in hotels? Like bad reviews online. So he built a system to help automate and collect and build the reputation online as a hotel. Really simple product too. And he charges a good amount of money. And he got that just from asking hotels that simple question. You know, I could go on and on, but the whole phase is start with the customer, start with pain, and then iterate and build a product on top of that. If you want to be an artist and you want to try and create your own thing, if you're just so stuck on that, try and pre-sell it in advance. But just me saying that, James, they're not going to be able to do it. You need like a completely new mindset. Like if you want to pre-sell a product before it exists, there's some internal mindset things that have to be reversed and looked at and dissected and diagnosed, because selling something before it exists is so foreign to people. People either feel like you're stealing or it's unethical or you have to have a product or they're just too insecure. They feel like they need something to rest on before they can go sell. There's a lot of emotional stuff that goes on with pre-selling. So,
well, you know, interestingly, back to my car background, most of the cars I sold were imaginary. We were speccing out builds that would go to the factory and then be built and delivered 3 to 6 months later. So there's a lot of intangible selling. And now in the current business, if I put on a workshop, I'm pre-selling something that doesn't exist yet. I basically collect all the money and then several months later, we hold an event. So people may be already doing it. They just haven't realized it.
Well, there are other areas where it seems like almost impossible to do. Like if you want to build an iPhone app, you're like, no, I have to build it and let people use it to see if it's successful. No, you don't. You can use products like Kinotopia.com, created by Amir Kella, who's just an awesome guy. And, you know, so Sam Ovens, the flagship poster boy of the foundation, he's a brilliant guy. He bought Kinotopia and he created a PowerPoint or a keynote PowerPoint presentation of his application, how it would look. And if you clicked around, it would jump to different slides. So it looked like a working app, but it only took him like a day to put together. And he would go into property management companies and be like, hey, check out this property inspection app. Would you use this? And they would go in and they would click around like, holy shit, I could inspect properties on my phone. He's like, yeah. They're like, well, how much is this? And then like, then he pre-sold it, got the money. Then he went and found a developer to build it. So there are the obvious ways where, you know, you do test a workshop and you record it and put it into a product. But then there's like the other really counterintuitive, like my mind now these days, James, is like, what can't you pre-sell? And like my mind is like, how can we figure out how to pre-sell everything?
Yeah, I'm with you. So it's kind of like that hyperloop of Elon Musk. It's got a fair bit of pre-selling happening with the open source transportation system.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but it sounds awesome.
Oh, it's it beats airplanes and fast trains and stuff. It's a little tube that you can hop in and then hop out at another city on the other side of the country in mere minutes.
That guy's way too smart for his own good.
Sounds like he's got some company motivation rallies to do, though. So tell me, what's one of your strongest beliefs now with your rewired brain, with this new outlook on life? What's something you passionately believe in? If we got you drunk or something and you're starting to tear up with emotion, what's something you just really believe in?
That business is pointless if you don't love yourself. And if you're going after this for what you think is freedom, it's not actually what you're after. You're actually after unconditionally loving yourself, and you're waiting for a business to feel that. Or if you already do love yourself and you want to do a business and you want the freedom, you still don't want the freedom. What you want is to live in the creative spark all day long. That's the most enjoyable place to live. You don't go and retire on the beach. You might think that, but after a month, you're going to get bored. The most enjoyable space that people live in until their old age and never give up is the creative spark, which is why you see that, like Leonardo da Vinci, and these guys worked into their 80s and 90s, and they were just geniuses all day because they realized that's the most enjoyable space to live from, is that creative spark. So like when you're in the creative spark, it's like everything flows. You have something like 80,000 recurring thoughts a day. And when you are bogged down by fear or lack of money or lack of, you know, quote, freedom or any, your 80,000 thoughts are consumed by all these fears. Well, once you can free up your fear, then like your 80,000 thoughts can be in this creative spark. And the creative spark doesn't mean coming up with your own business ideas. It can mean talking to your customers in fun and creative ways to create ideas with them. But my deeper calling in life is to help people recognize how brilliant they are. When I'm on my deathbed, I'm not going to care if I drank every ounce of life to the last drop. I'm not going to care if I, well, I will care. It's actually a matter of priorities. It's important to me to live life, but I'm not going to consider my life a waste if I didn't live it to the last drop. I'm not going to consider life a waste if I didn't make the most money. I'm going to consider my life a waste if I didn't do everything in my power to empower as many people in the world to realize how brilliant they are. And that's like the goal. That's the goal of the foundation at a deeper level, is saying, yes, you can. You can have anything you want regardless of the circumstance. You are brilliant. And it's just, we just happen to wrap it around, build a nice software business. But the deeper game for me is, I don't know if you know how Martin Luther King was inspired, but he was inspired by Gandhi. And if you look up Martin Luther King, Gandhi on YouTube, you'll see a video back in the 60s where Martin Luther King's like being interviewed, and the guy's like, "So, Martin, what's like, why are you doing this? Who inspired you?" And he's like, "Well, Mark Gandhi did. And I read everything I could on Gandhi, and I was so moved by him that I wanted to, after I understood everything about Gandhi, I wanted to take everything I learned from Gandhi and I wanted to do something like that in the United States of America."
Yeah, I'm reading about him in A Start With Why.
Oh, cool.
By Simon Sinek.
Cool.
Now, where did you get your inspiration from? It sounds like you've been researching and studying and learning something. And I've got to say, having listened to you on some other podcasts as part of my exposure to you a year or two ago, your message is a little bit different to the typical sort of consumer message and the make money sort of message. Although I do notice your Facebook ads have something about your job sucks. So I'm going to ask you to come back. Would you come back on another episode and talk about sales and marketing? Because my audience love that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Day jobs suck is our highest converting ad. We pay an analytics guy a pretty decent chunk of change to run in-depth analytics on our business, and I'd be happy to share all of them.
Yeah. So we'll get you back on another show, and we'll talk about marketing. But going back to that question, what about your inspiration? Where did this come from? Was it Martin Luther King?
I don't know. I just remember like it hitting me that I just want children to know how brilliant they are. And I don't think they have anyone that's making a stand for them. And now I feel the tears coming. But like if all the children in the world could realize how brilliant they are and what their potential is, and someone could be a stand for how just brilliant they are, that's like a life well lived to me. If I could just travel the world and just like touch every child and be like, "You are brilliant." And I have this whole process that I want to take these kids through where, you know, I'm walking down the street and I see these three kids walking across the other side of the street. And I think that guy could be the next Edison. That guy could be the next Einstein. That guy could be the next Martin Luther King. And I have this process where I want to take them through a personality test. And then when they come out of the test, like in seventh grade or whatever, be like, yo, James, in seventh grade, like you were an achiever. Do you know how amazing the achiever personality type is? Do you know that you're just like Michael Jordan and Madonna and like all these great people? You could be Michael Jordan or Madonna. Or any, like they're the same person you are. They're the same personality type. And you have your own unique gifts, but like the potential you have is the same. You're not the same person. I misspoke. But so here are Michael Jordan's personality traits, his skills, his habits, his flaws, and a very nice condensed report that you can look and be like, oh my gosh, I actually do have a lot of similarities to Michael Jordan. And the ones I don't, I can learn. And not only do you have the potential to be Michael Jordan, but you could actually be better because you can learn from the mistakes that he made. Or the next kid comes back and it's like, hey, you're an investigator. Do you know how brilliant you are? You have the potential to be Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein was an investigator. And here are Albert Einstein's personality traits, skills, habits, and flaws in a really, really well-written story format that even an adult would enjoy. And it just makes so much sense to me to give this stuff to kids. And I remember reading the book Titan, which is the 800-page biography of John D. Rockefeller. And it was a bear to read, but it changed my life. So much that I condensed that 800-page biography down into a 30-page summary of John D. Rockefeller's personality traits, skills, habits, and flaws, and I published it all around the internet. And I still have people write into me every once in a while about how much it's changed their life. Because, you know, I came up with like 16 or 17 personality traits of John Rockefeller. And, you know, he used to do the craziest things. Like when he was 12 years old, he would volunteer at church, and when people would empty the pews, when they walked out of the pews, he would immediately turn out the candle. Whereas other volunteers would wait till everyone was out of the church to turn off all the candles. Well, John would save like, you know, 300% more candles than the average person. Well, now take that same shrewdness of how he handled candles, and it's no wonder that he was so wonderful in business because he was so conservative with spending money and waste and resources. He was always so efficient. And like when you read things like that, you're like, oh my gosh, I could totally pick up that trait, especially if you had the same personality makeup as Rockefeller. So my like the thing that jazzes me is aligning the world with their personality type and aligning that with magnificent people who have done remarkable things with similar personality types to show them the potential of what they could be.
Yeah. And now, do you have kids yet?
No.
Ah, see, I've got four kids and I'm on the same page. And I was just watching a video from Vishen Lakhani, and he's talking about his kids in his latest product. And I totally agree. My kids have had completely different belief systems to what's provided at school and what general society is out there. Just cruising around the United States the last week or so, I've noticed some really interesting things, like they have gambling, instant lottery machines in the supermarket, and they have alcohol in the supermarket, and they have very bad food choices and bulk packaging and stuff. It's a wonder how someone actually makes good choices when there's so much bad material out there pretty much everywhere you turn. So I think that there needs to be more discussion on this. You know, like my kids, when they're young, have done remarkable things, and I'm very proud of what they've been able to do. Even my daughter actually will buy a horse and then renovate that horse, do it up, and then market it on Facebook to a horse group and take the sale. She writes a sales page. She takes the call. She screens the applicant, does a demo in the local arena, and then does the transfer of sale. And she makes a profit. And all of this at age 15, you think she's going to be fine later on in business. She's already published a book. More kids need to have exposure to entrepreneurial thinking.
That example is better than anyone I've given in this call. That is so awesome.
Well, I could tell you hundreds. I mean, this kid built a website at one of my events when she was 12 or 13 out in front of the audience. And the concept was to teach adults that there should be no fear of trying it. A lot of the more aged or mature people in my community have come up under a different environment where everything had to be right for a product to be successful, because once it went to market, there was no recall. But with things like software, you can make a lot of changes on the fly. And there's so many examples I could give you of how I learnt that lesson. But one in particular, when I used to be at Mercedes-Benz, we used to be able to drive a company vehicle. And whenever I had salespeople join the company, it was interesting to watch them leave the dealership at the end of the day, because every day you drive a different car. Some of them would get in the car, they would take their jacket off, they would adjust the seat, they would adjust the mirror, get the right radio station, set the air conditioning, familiarize themselves with all the controls, and then proceed to the exit. Sometimes this ceremony would take like 40 minutes. It was remarkable. I would get into a new car, make sure that I could see the mirror, and then I would start the journey. And then on the fly, while I'm at the next traffic lights, adjust the radio. At the next traffic lights, adjust the air. I'd be home before these people even left the lot, because you can iterate on the fly. But the main thing is to you know, pick your destination, you know, and start moving, and then make adjustments. So yeah, it's interesting. Probably a lot of these things apply to software.
Well, a lot of these things apply to life. The best ideas, like when you live in the creative spark, that's when your best ideas come to you. And so if you're waiting to get started on something and you're not in that creative spark, then it's unlikely you'll end up stumbling onto that. It's been rare for me, and it's been rare for people I know, to just come up with like an idea out of just sitting down on their sofa. Like usually the ideas come while they're living in that awesome creative spark. I know Roger Hamilton, I think, from Wealth Dynamics, that mm-hmm. personality profile. Do you know that thing?
Yes, I do.
He created that while he was in the creative spark and flow on a completely different idea. That idea hit him. And my most successful product is paperlesspipeline.com, and it's currently hovering around $65,000 a month. And I've walked away from that business. I got a CEO who runs it. It hovers at a 25% profit margin. So I'm taking anywhere from 12 to 15K a month, hands-free. I don't touch it. But that's like the business that I used for the foundation framework. And now the foundation framework is way better than anything I could ever imagine, because our students are iterating on it. And I got Paperless Pipeline, the idea for that, by being in flow and in the creative spark with something else. And that's when that idea came to me from a customer, when I was in the creative spark with him on another product. He's like, whoa, hey, could you actually make this for me over here? And I was like, well, I don't know how to make that. And he's like, well, I'll tell you exactly how to build it. And I was like, well, would you buy it? And he's like, yeah. I was like, what would you pay? He's like, I'd pay $300 a month. And I was like, well, would your friends buy it? And he's like, yeah, all my friends are waiting for this product the second it's released. I was like, okay, I'll build it. So I went and built it for $8,000 in 8 weeks. And it launched, and now it's at $65,000 a month. And I got an offer for $2.2 million to sell this year that I declined. And it all came in the creative spark. And just that's like the creative spark. As I'm saying all this, James, I'm like, I got to be in the creative spark more myself.
Well, you know, I'll give you one example of a creative spark. And this is for the listeners. It's not for my own indulgence. But are you familiar with the legendary copywriter John Carlton?
Not only am I familiar with him, I have copied by hand many, many, many of his ads.
Right. Well, he's a friend of mine, and he was around at my house, and he noticed my kid playing Guitar Hero on PlayStation. And he's like, Shrek, get that kid a real guitar. And so I said to my son, we've got to get you a guitar. And Carlton prescribed he said, you need this guitar, you need this amp, and you need to get him lessons. And he keeps sending me, I'm very lucky, but he keeps sending me prescriptions and, you know, all the rules, like no tattoos, no chicks in the band. He needs to now progress to acoustic. He needs blah, blah, blah. So I'm very lucky to have this. So my son got the real guitar. He went to the lessons. Not long after, the teacher phoned us up and he said, I'm sorry, but I can't teach your son anymore. And we're like, why? What's he done wrong? He goes, no, he's past my level. And so basically Carlton spotted this spark with my son with the Guitar Hero, replaced it with a real guitar and a steep learning curve, but the right instructions. And now my kid's the lead guitarist in the rock band. He plays gigs and he's just loving it. And instead of making him work at McDonald's or Subway or whatever, I'm like, play as many gigs as you can possibly play. He's got three guitars. He plays every day till he can't play anymore. And he's very good. So I've seen that spark go from a game to something serious. And I think, again, that's one of my other kids, and I'm very pleased with his progression. But I think as a business metaphor, if there's a listener on this call who's sort of playing and knows it, like the Guitar Hero version, and wants to step it up and go pro, you may need a little bit of equipment. You may need some tuition. You may need to grind it out a bit, but the spoils are out there to get.
Yeah, and I really think the foundation is the best place for new entrepreneurs to come. I feel like it's also a wonderful place for seasoned business owners who want to get into software.
Yeah, and I think that it's good to have somewhere to send people who want to do startups.
Yeah.
Because I'll go for the easy stuff. So, Dane, you've been super generous with this information, especially we've really covered – it's kind of like the 5 steps for startups framework you've given, and a healthy dose of philosophy around mindset, practical information, actually, I'll call it, around mindset, because – everything starts with the mind before you lay a step on the business. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, you can do business. Like I just want to say yes to you, but just to illustrate, like, you know, when you go into karate, the first thing people usually want to learn how is to break a board with their hand. And if they went in and tried to break a board with their hand right away, they would actually end up breaking their hand, because it's not about cracking the board with your hand. It's about the mindset and the approach of it. So you can go and start the business without the mind, but you'll end up breaking your life.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. So we're going to end it there. I'll put a link to the foundation. People can check that out. If you're interested in doing a startup or having a brain reboot, or you've gone down a path and not met with success, it sounds like the odds are in your favor.
And James, I'd like to offer them. So, you know, the hardest phase is pre-selling. So special for your audience, I wanted to put together a free info pack that they could look at, so they could see an example of how to create a product, how to sell a product before it exists, like a special link just for your listeners.
Very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just thefoundation.com/James. You could put that in the...
Yeah, that'll go in the show notes.
Yeah.
I want to say, again, thank you for sharing this. It's really interesting to have a chat, having been aware of you on the sidelines, having dealt with many people in common. And having met you for about 5 minutes earlier this year, it's nice to get on and have a little chat.
I agree, man. Thanks for doing what you're doing in the world. I'm a big fan of Superfast Business.
Oh, awesome.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.